Thanks for listening to the Get Over Yourself podcast, brought to you by Carol Fit Stationary Bike Program, 8-minute workouts to get super fit. Perfect Keto, the cleanest, highest potency ketone supplements. MOFO, male optimization formula with organs to boost testosterone. Let's Get Checked, at home testing kits. Try LGC.com. Almost Heaven, beautiful compact home use sauna kits. Brad's Macadamia Masterpiece, the mind-blowing nut butter blend. And check out bradkearns.com/shop, my personal selection of favorite products for health, fitness, and peak performance. And here we go with the show. When you swing the pendulum too far in the other direction, the emotional feeling brain starts to run amok again, right? So on the two edges of the continuum, we have the emotionally driven human delving into narcissism, addiction, compulsion, self-righteous anger. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the controlled, suppressed, think about the gender roles that John Gray talked about a little bit, where we have the male breadwinner who comes home, pops open a beer, and gets waited on by the dutiful female partner who's supposed to be barefoot in the kitchen making food, making babies, right? All that kind of nonsense that we've had to grow through in recent decades. If we can't equalize, like I discussed with the bully example, we accept inferiority, shame, and low self-worth. I'm thinking of the great work of Brené Brown, talking about the sources of shame and how to get through that kind of challenge here, where we're adding up the sum of our emotional experiences and then forming negative self-image because of the moral gap, because we didn't fully process these emotions. You need to convince your feeling brain that you'll benefit from whatever decision you're asking yourself about. You need buy-in from the feeling brain. The reason we don't succeed with lifestyle change is our feeling brain feels like we don't deserve the success. Perfect, perfect, perfect keto. They are makers of a complete line of keto-friendly supplements and food products. Many unique items that you won't find anywhere else. Everything with exceptional high quality and product cleanliness. That's right. They don't have any artificial ingredients, sweeteners, fillers, binders, or other crap. And they make a point at the company to emphasize education and living a keto-friendly lifestyle. So breaking free of kind of the gimmicks and the idea of swallowing a ketogenic supplement to lose weight. It's not about that. It's about staying aligned with your ketogenic dietary goals with high quality supplement products and the food products. I like to use the Perfect Keto base in and around my high intensity workouts. So what I'm doing is sipping this before, during, and after my sprinting or my high jumping sessions, thereby minimizing inflammation and free radical production at the very time when I need most to be clean burning. So check them out at perfectketo.com. And guess what? Buy one product and get 40% off the second one with the special screaming deal and the code BRAD40. Just go over to the bradkearns.com shopping page, click there, and you'll land on my custom designed homepage at perfectketo.com and automatically get that awesome discount. That's right. Buy one, get 40% off the second product, the best tasting, cleanest fuel on the market, perfectketo.com. Hey, listeners, I hope you love, love, love my show with the super cool dude, Mark Manson, mega best-selling author of The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and his sequel book, Everything is Fucked, a book about hope. And look at all the people that copied his spicy title from several years ago when the first book launched. And now, oh my gosh, we're all about the getting unfucked, being confident as fucked. But he started it all, and I wanted to share some summary insights from the content of the book that will give you some practical advice right away, but also inspire you to dig in and read this great work from this young author that's gone into extreme popularity, and I think he's one of the great philosophers of modern times, putting a lot of history and referencing the great minds of the past into the unique circumstances of daily life. So the first book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, is kind of a reaction to the self-help industry and what Manson saw as a culture of mindless positivity that isn't practical or helpful for most people. This is a quote from a book description, and then my own insights will be sprinkled in throughout this breather show. Manson uses many of his own personal experiences to illustrate how life's struggles often give it more meaning, which he argues is a better approach than constantly trying to be happy. So we have that distinction that other philosophers have shared with us as well. Between trying to constantly be happy and positive and carry through this disposition that might not be as valid or authentic as persevering through struggle and appreciating struggle as one of the great areas of richness in life. I like to quote Roger Bannister, the first sub-4-minute miler, the late Sir Roger Bannister, and he wrote a wonderful book about his running career that was published back in the 50s when he was still a young man and had retired into a pursuit of a career in medicine. And he said, "Struggle gives meaning and richness to life." And of course, he was talking about his athletic pursuits and striving to break the magical sub-4-minute mile barrier and compete in the Olympics, world-level events. But to have that compelling goal of trying to be his best in the athletic realm and then applying that mindset, that mentality to all other goals that you face in life, whether it's relationship goals, being a parent, staying fit and healthy, controlling the wayward negative thoughts and ruminations and FOMO that we suffer from in today's culture. You know, finding something that's meaningful to struggle for is a great insight that came out of Manson's book. And then, of course, the title, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, really means the subtle art of choosing very carefully to choose what you give a fuck about and then kind of rejecting a lot of the societal pressures and forces that measure and judge us and kind of draw us into those horrible disease states like FOMO. So back to the written description. Manson's approach and writing style have been categorized by some as contrarian to the general self-help industry, using blunt honesty and profanity to illustrate his ideas. Our modern and maddening urge to always find happiness only serves to make us unhappier. Instead, the subtle art turns out to be a bold challenge to choose your struggles and to narrow and focus and find the pain that you want to sustain, the positive aspects of having a life of rich, meaningful struggles. Okay, a few more details about the theme in the book. Manson argues that identity doesn't exist. It's arbitrary. It's a facade. Quote, "Maintain an identity that is defined by as little as possible. Instead, see your life as a series of decisions and actions." And he gives the example of someone wishing they could be better about their commitment to fitness, working out, going to the gym. And the shift from being a person who's lazy and non-committed to becoming a fitness enthusiast is more difficult because you're attaching your identity to various things in life. And by doing so, the stakes are higher, you get discouraged, you get negative, and then you tailspin away from your best intentions to become a different person, become a better person. Now, if you instead just saw your life as a series of decisions and actions and weren't wedded to the outcome in the way that you are when you form your identity around being a lawyer or being a school teacher or being the president of the neighborhood society, all these things that we get our egos involved with and then are less effective and set ourselves up for more
our pain, suffering, disappointment, and failure to achieve tangible goals. Instead, see your life as a series of decisions and actions. So you wake up one day and you say, I'm going to decide to go to the gym. The stakes are more reasonable, and you can just take action and kind of cruise along without the emotional baggage that often comes when our identity is attached to the things that we do. So this is kind of in line with his overarching theme of choosing what to give a fuck about and then not worrying about the rest, being precise on what you choose to give a fuck about. Here's some chapter titles to intrigue you to grab this mega best-selling book that was just off the charts with record-breaking numbers of sales and translations around the world. So chapter one is called Don't Try. Chapter two, Happiness is a Problem. Three, You Are Not Special. Four, The Value of Suffering. Five, You Are Always Choosing. Six, You Are Wrong About Everything, But So Am I. Seven, Failure is the Way Forward. Eight, The Importance of Saying No. Nine, And Then You Die. So I thought I would recite the chapter titles because they're clever and they give you a little bit of insight, hopefully with my description helping as well, as to what the book's all about and the message they're conveying. Okay, so then the most recent book, Everything is Fucked, a book about hope. I took a little bit more notes because I wanted to share that one because it's probably less popular at this point than the crazy first book. But if you love the first book, definitely grab the second book, and it really drew me in. I refer to these concepts often to help navigate the wild times of modern life. I want my kids to read it. Good stuff. So in this book, Manson looks at our relationships with money, entertainment, and the internet, how too much of a good thing can psychologically eat us alive. He openly defies our definitions of faith, happiness, freedom, and even hope itself. So the idea of this book, a book about hope, is that you want to create a, quote, string of hope narratives as your defining purpose in life. If you don't have hope, you are basically headed toward depression and anxiety. So all the things that we do, all the things that we care about, sort of emanate from hope is the wonderful point that he makes persuasively in the book. And here's the thing about today's world. By many practical measurements, life is better today than any other time in the history of humanity. We have more sustained a period of peace. There's no world wars. There's not a ton of minor conflicts. Of course, there's always something going on. But by comparison, today's world is better than ever. Compared to the Middle Ages, compared to our grandparents' and great-grandparents' generations, Mark Bell put this incredible post up on Instagram. And I'm going to read some of that too, just to give you a little bit of context when the argument that Manson advances that today is better than ever falls flat because you don't like our president or you think that North Korea is going to launch the bombs any moment. All those things might be relevant, but whew, compared to generations ago, yeah, we've really managed to progress as a global society, despite all the things that still have and needs to improve marked by them. So go look at the great Instagram site of Mark Smelly Bell, my main man, the meathead millionaire, leader in the fitness community. And he's got a lot of great posts on there. And in this one, he's posting a picture of some really distressed looking refugees, all young children, emaciated, starving, dressed in tatters. And the title of the post is Perspective. Imagine you were an American born in 1900. That's the exact year my grandfather was born. And so this was his life. Whew. That's me talking. And then back to Mark Bell's post. When you're 14, World War I starts and ends on your 18th birthday. 22 million people killed. Later in the year, a Spanish flu pandemic hits the planet and runs until you're age 20. 50 million people die in 2 years. Then when you're 29, the Great Depression begins. Unemployment hits 25%. Global GDP drops 27%. And this runs until you're age 33. The country nearly collapses along with the world economy. Then when you turn 39, World War II starts. When you're 41, the United States is fully involved in World War II, and between your 39th and 45th birthday, 75 million people perish in the war. The Holocaust kills 6 million. At age 52, the Korean War starts and 5 million people perish. When you're 64 years old, the Vietnam War begins and doesn't end for many years. 4 million people die in that conflict. Then at your 62nd birthday, you have the Cuban Missile Crisis, a tipping point in the Cold War. Life on the planet as we know it could well have ended. Great leaders prevented that from happening. Then when you're 75, the Vietnam War finally ends. Think of everyone on the planet born in 1900. How do you survive all of that? A kid in 1985 didn't think their 85-year-old grandparent understood how hard school was, yet those grandparents and great-grandparents survived through everything listed above. Perspective is an amazing art. Let's try to keep things in perspective. This was written during the time of the quarantine, social isolation, the economy struggling accordingly. But if we can keep things in perspective, let's be smart, try to help each other out, and we'll get through all this. In the history of the world, there has never been a storm that lasted, and this too shall pass. That's Mark Bell on Instagram. And back to Mark Manson's argument that this is a better time in the world than ever before. Here's the thing. We have something called a paradox of progress. Life gets too easy, too comfortable, and when that happens, we have to pick a cause to worry about to give us meaning. John Gray mentioned this in my show with him. He said that affluent couples have a higher rate of marital conflict because they have the time and energy to worry about nitpicky relationship issues rather than just, you know, fighting the battle together to make ends meet and to pay the rent at their apartment. So, yeah, interesting perspective that we kind of trend toward drama, conflict in our lives when things get easy. So to create a string of hope narratives, this goal to become our defining purpose in life, what do we need for hope? First, a sense of control. Second, believing in and valuing something. And third, a sense of community. So think about that and apply that to the things that you care about. Your sense of community is a huge one. Believing in, caring about something, valuing something. I'm thinking of like fitness goals and people that are members of CrossFit community or endurance training teams and have that amazing connection of people working toward a common goal that's challenging, involves struggle, and giving meaning and richness to life, like Roger Bannister said. So then Manson gets into this really interesting argument that our emotional feeling brain actually rules over the rational thinking brain. But because we have this rational thinking brain, the thinking brain concludes that it's the one in charge of the show. We pretend that the rational thinking brain rules over the emotional brain, but it's actually not true. We're taught to suppress our emotions, but this too is a fallacy. When you suppress your emotions, that's getting a lobotomy. So the emotions are always there, and Manson argues that emotions drive our consciousness. Only emotion motivates us to action, not rational conclusions of which car we're going to buy because it got better ratings on Consumer Reports. That is the illusion. It's the emotions that trigger these purchasing decisions, and a good example, or also summoning the motivation to get off the couch and get into the gym and get in shape. So, since only emotion motivates us to action, we need to get buy-in from our emotional brain in order to take action toward a goal. Emotions convince your thinking brain that you're right. This is the essence of self-serving bias or confirmation bias, right? Your emotions convincing your thinking brain that you're right. This kind of behavior, where the emotions are ruling over the thinking brain, leads to, not so many good things, huh? Can you guess? It leads to narcissism, addiction, compulsion, self-righteous anger, and so on. A person ruled by emotions has no independent thought and only pursues instant gratification. So the idea, the goal here, is to get your thinking brain connected with your emotional brain, not to suppress your emotions or steamroll them with your powerful intellect that knows everything what to do and you don't have to listen to your emotions. No, the history of humanity features a major effort to conquer the emotional feeling brain with self-control. So we've known this for a long time, that we have to not let our emotions rule our behavior, right? Otherwise we get narcissism, addiction, compulsion, self-righteous anger. And so how have we tried this throughout the history of humanity? Yes, religion is the big one, right? Suppress your emotions, suppress your instincts, follow the rules, go to confession if you stray a little bit. He also references cultism as an extreme example of trying to conquer the emotional feeling brain that's actually in control with self-controlling guidelines, okay? So what happened in the 20th century was this awakening occurred and people rebelled against the long-time, centuries-old self-control mechanisms in society, like religious doctrine, and they began to express their emotions and passions. We had the rebellious decades of the 60s and the freedom of the 70s, right? Here's Manson making the argument that when you swing the pendulum too far in the other direction, the emotional feeling brain starts to run amok again, right? So on the two edges of the continuum, we have the emotionally driven human delving into narcissism, addiction, compulsion, self-righteous anger. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the controlled, suppressed, think about the gender roles that John Gray talked about a little bit, where we have the male breadwinner who comes home, pops open a beer, and gets waited on by the dutiful female partner who's supposed to be barefoot in the kitchen, making food, making babies, right? All that kind of nonsense that we've had to grow through in recent decades. Geez, how about the suppression of one's sexuality? You can't get any deeper of a suppression than that. And the great giant religious bodies and political bodies trying to strong-arm people into that deep of a emotional suppression hole. So we have that end of the spectrum. And then we have today's common problem, since the pendulum has swung away from all that nonsense. But then we get today's stereotypical, affluent, entitled, spoiled millennial or spoiled adult. Let's not pick on the millennials, right? These kind of the narcissism that's running amok. So the solution, get your thinking brain connected with your feeling brain. When pondering logical life decisions, ask your feeling brain to weigh in. Weigh all logical decisions by asking yourself how you feel about whatever consequence, quitting your job, moving to a new city, getting involved in a relationship, severing a relationship, and assess the emotional answer without judgment. Don't try to suppress your emotions. You need to convince your feeling brain that you'll benefit from whatever decision you're asking yourself about. You need buy-in from the feeling brain. The reason we don't succeed with lifestyle change is our feeling brain feels like we don't deserve the success, and we get stuck in a repeating pattern of suffering that comes from past programming. I got into this a little bit with Luke Story in that great discussion near the end of our interview when he was talking about the manifestation of wealth, of your dreams, and how we commonly misinterpret that to think that we try to manifest wealth so that we can be happy. And he says, no, you have to come from a position of gratitude and then see yourself into, with great specificity, the life that you dream about. So that's kind of convincing your feeling brain that it will benefit from, rather than deep down feeling undeserving of happiness, wealth, peace of mind, contentment, a life well lived. Don't pass this stuff off as silly. There's a common notion in spiritual psychology that the affluence and love we achieve in life equates to our level of self-worth. In his book, The Big Leap, psychologist Gay Hendricks advances the compelling argument that we bump up against what he calls an upper limit in life. And this is described in Hendricks' words as, quote, "It's an inner thermostat setting that determines how much love, success, and creativity we allow ourselves to enjoy. The thermostat setting usually gets programmed in early childhood. Once programmed, our upper limit thermostat setting holds us back from enjoying all the love, financial abundance, and creativity that's rightfully ours," end quote. Whew. Okay, so get that feeling brain to buy in, right? Just like the scenes in the movies. Yeah, I deserve it. That sounds good. All right, let's do this. Okay, so otherwise you get stuck in patterns of past programming and suffering. So Manson has a clever device where he's talking about Isaac Newton's laws of gravity. And then because we're talking about the emotional brain, he talks a lot about the amazing life of Isaac Newton. And he draws in this new idea of Newton's laws of emotion, of course, that he made up to kind of counterbalance the rational brain, the thinking brain, and all the great work that Newton did. But he had a rough life, and it was a very interesting story. But he came up with this concept of Newton's laws of emotion. Here's the first one. Every emotional reaction has an equal and opposite reaction. If it doesn't, we develop what's called a moral gap. So if you can think about being bullied as a child in middle school and suffering these intense, painful emotions, but not able to fight back or lash back at the bullies, that's the nature of bullying, right? Then the equal and opposite emotional reaction is going to be a suppression that leads to low self-esteem and continued pain and suffering throughout life. Okay, so when you have a chance to equalize an emotional reaction with a corresponding emotional reaction, then you don't have that moral gap. And this could be, another example could be a passive-aggressive dynamic where there's a conflict and then the equal and opposite emotional reaction comes in the form of passive-aggressive rather than going toe-to-toe in a more classic example of a conflict. Next law of emotion. Our self-worth is the sum of our emotions over time. If we can't equalize, like I discussed with the bully example, we accept inferiority, shame, and low self-worth. I'm thinking of the great work of Brené Brown talking about the sources of shame and how to get through that kind of challenge here where we're, adding up the sum of our emotional experiences and then forming negative self-image because of the moral gap, because we didn't, fully process these emotions. Oh, guess what the flip side is? Diluted high self-worth. Both high and low self-worth are narcissistic because they imagine themselves as something special, something separate from the world. So remember going back to the first book of Identity is an Illusion, self-worth is also an illusion. And if you harbor self-worth, if you cultivate self-worth, self-woof, then you should get a dog. Woof, woof. Okay, self-worth. If you are trafficking in self-worth, this is a form of persistent low-level narcissism. Right? Makes sense? Hey, I was an athlete. I was pretty caught up in the importance of my pursuits as a competitive triathlete and at times making it very easy to attach self-worth to what place I got in the most recent race. Right? You're on a winning streak, you get some diluted high self-worth, and then you're on a losing streak and you get delusional low self-worth. Both are narcissistic because they imagine themselves as something special, something separate from the world. One of my favorite examples of getting recalibrated from a potentially diluted high self-worth was the day after I won this big race on the professional triathlon circuit, and then I jogged over to the swimming pool to do a workout, feeling pretty good about myself, getting a little stretch in for the muscles after the great performance the previous day, and I got out of the pool and went to my locker at Pierce College in Woodland Hills, California, and everything was stolen. The locker was looted. So my shoes, my clothes, my expensive sunglasses, thankfully a sponsor gave them to me. Remember, I just won a big race. And so I had to jog home about a mile and a half on a busy boulevard wearing a Speedo and, of course, my goggles barefoot. And so that was getting taken down from being the champ the day before and giving a nice victory speech to the adoring crowd at the triathlon gathering. Whoever stole the stuff out of my locker didn't give a crap about who won the race the day before. And there I was getting looked at by passing cars, jogging along in a Speedo. Oh, yeah. Okay. So that was the second law of emotion. Our self-worth is the sum of our emotions over time, and if we can't equalize, we accept inferiority, shame, and low self-worth. Finally, the third one, your identity will stay your identity until an event changes it. It's a network of value-based narratives that determines our identity. So there's two ways to heal. First, examine the narratives of your life and reposition them. Second, visualize the future that you want for yourself and make that your new identity. Okay, that's pretty awesome. Pretty simple, the first one, right? Go back and process things and realize just because you were bullied in middle school doesn't mean you have to accept inferiority, shame, and low self-worth today. Second, visualize the future that you want for yourself. Single people, visualize the ideal relationship. My recent podcast guest, Dude Spellings, did an exercise with his girlfriend to write out their view of an ideal partner and then share it with each other. What great stuff. So visualize the future you want and make that your new identity. Let the feeling brain try it on and become accustomed to it. Hey, you know what? This could be a difficult exercise, Manson says, because if you're going to do it, that means you really are ready to change. And the stories of our future define our hopes. The stories of our past define our identity. And let's take a look at both of those and get them right, get them straight. It's a book about hope after all. I hope you enjoyed this little summary and will intrigue you to go get the audiobook narrated by the author himself or the written book. Great stuff. Thank you so much, Mark Manson, for taking the time to join me on the podcast and get that great interview out there. So please go listen to the interview if you haven't already. Thanks for listening to The Breather Show. Yeah, you can find Mark Manson on Instagram. He publishes great quotes every day and all over the place. Of course, the books are everywhere, and they have a two-book package you can get on Amazon of Everything is Fucked, a book about hope, and The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. So go grab it. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thank you for listening to the show. We would love your feedback at getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. And we would also love if you could leave a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a hassle. You have to go to desktop iTunes, click on the tab that says ratings and reviews, and then click to rate the show anywhere from 5 to 5 stars. And it really helps spread the word so more people can find the show and get over themselves, because they need to. Thanks for doing it.